Welcome, everyone. I think we'll make a start. Sorry, James, to rush you. Welcome to Wednesday at the Wharf. We're continuing the series we started last week in the book of Colossians, and we're titling our series True Spirituality. And this is the second in the series. James Buchanan, who works at St. Helen's Church in the city, where they have a ministry among working people in the city, is going to come and speak to us on Colossians chapter 1. James and I were on a ministry training program at St. Helens together for a couple of years, and he's continued to work there. Just so that you know, next week, Peter Goodridge, who works at Chevron Texaco, who you might know, is normally along here on Wednesday lunchtimes, he's going to be speaking to us and continuing the series in Colossians. But we've got James today, and before James comes and speaks to us, let's read the passage. So it's Colossians chapter 1 on page 1183. Page 1183, Colossians chapter 1. Page 1183, and it's Colossians chapter 1. And we're starting to read from verse 15. Chapter 1, verse 15. Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, who once were alienated and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh by his death, in order to present you holy and blameless and above reproach before him, if indeed you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel that you heard, which has been proclaimed in all creation under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister.
Thanks, Richard. Well, it's great sadness to me, because last talk, I said that Richard didn't sing it out, and I reminded him that it was a song. And again, this time round, he didn't sing it out again, which is very upsetting. This is actually meant to be a song, so Richard should have lovingly sang it to us. So do talk to him afterwards about that. But it's a song that the Colossian Christians would have known, and it's the heart of Paul's argument. It is the thrust of his argument. So he's got to it early in the day. He doesn't mince his words. We're into the second talk, and this is the heart of Paul's argument. And it's in a song, I think, for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because it is such awesome truth. I mean, he has to burst into song to proclaim it, because it is such wonderful truth about Christ. It's such awesome news. But not just that. As I said before, it's a song that they would have known, a song that they would have been singing. And it's a wonderful thing, isn't it, if you're arguing with a colleague at work or you're doing a presentation and your key deal clincher argument is something the people you're talking to already know, already accept, already agree with. If that is the deal clincher argument, well, then you know you're on to a winner, don't you? If it's something they already agree with. And that is exactly what Paul's done. He has steered the argument to something that they would already agree with. And that is what he builds his case on. And as I'm sure you heard last week, he's arguing against false teachers at Colossae. People who would have called themselves Christians, but would have been teaching the Christians at Colossae that the way that they stop indulging the flesh, as they explain later on in Colossians, the way that they make themselves above reproach towards Christ is by keeping the law. Keeping the Old Testament law, the Ten Commandments, or whatever it is, seeking visions of angels and experiences to urge them on to do that, to be keeping that law. It is a very Jewish sort of way of life, and you could see why that might have force on them. It might be an argument that they would be persuaded by, as it's something, a way that God always used to act, you know, for centuries upon centuries, how God's people always used to live. You can see why it's a plausible argument. Now, I don't know about you, but often we're not tempted to become Jews, tempted down that line. But the way it touches home for me is as I think of my pride and arrogance. And I realise, as I think of people around me, people I know, maybe people in your office, that those people could never be Christians. I think in my head that that person could never be a Christian. I know what he gets up to on a Friday night. I know what she does when she goes away on business. She could never be a Christian. Or even just think of myself and think I'm just above other people as a Christian. I'm a slightly different order of things. As you think there's something in you that makes you different, something about you, something that you have done. And I guess that would look like in your life as somebody who is seeking to keep going as a Christian in your own strength, doing it by yourself. Something that I think we're always tempted to do day in and day out. Always tempted to find little rules, whatever they are, whether they're the Ten Commandments or not, to be obeying, to be doing in our own strength by ourselves. Seeking to have experiences and visions to spur us on to do them. All things that are apart from Christ. Seeking those things to keep going as a Christian. So I hope you can see that he is not just arguing against the false teachers at Colossae, but he's also arguing against our hearts and the way by nature we long to be. Well, for me just to show you how this is the heart of the argument, let me just quickly recap what we heard last week. Now, I know you heard it last week because I read the talk, yesterday in fact. So this is what you heard as a reminder. Firstly, that Paul was thanking God for making these people at Colossae into Christians. He was thanking them for doing that work. And he was also praying to God that God might keep them as Christians, might keep them going as Christians. Now, I've been studying Colossians for about 6 months with some guys in the city. We're a bit slow in the city, and it's taking us 6 months to get through it. But they very helpfully came up with a very neat summary, very simple summary, because we are simple. It says, God has started you in the Christian life, and God is sustaining you in the Christian life. That is what we learnt last week. God starts you and sustains you in the Christian life. And this week, to put it very bluntly, Paul puts it in the form of a song, but I'm English and I can't do things like that, too emotional for me. This is what it is, very clearly, just so we get it, and then we'll look at it in its more emotional sort of term. These are the two points on your handout. This is what he's saying. He's saying, Christ is God. And so Christ starts you in the Christian life. Now, I hope you can see how that, how logical that is in his argument. Having already stated something that they would have agreed with, that God starts you and sustains you in the Christian life. Everybody would have agreed with that. Something they would have accepted. It was just a question of how he does it. How he does it. So they would have accepted that. And the real deal clincher is to show them that Christ is God. And as I said, that he does it in the form of this song, something that they would have been singing themselves, they would have known themselves.